Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Phil Vitale writes about the restaurant scene for the Chicago Tribune, and he's on line 7. Hi, Phil. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm fine, thank you.
I know you're not 100%, but you're enough of a percent to join us on the phone. Is that correct?
Right, yeah. Staying a little close to home today. A little irpy. It'll keep me off the Halloween candy.
So that means pot pies, right? You'll be reviewing pot pies for us?
Right, yeah. I'll be reviewing ginger ale and toast.
Chilling tales from the walk-in cooler. An appropriate Halloween topic. Restaurant pros share funny, scary stories from behind the line. So you went to some of the restaurateurs of Chicago and said, okay, what was the worst thing that happened to you in the restaurant, huh?
Yeah, I asked them for cute stories because this is just one of those rare times in which my food and dining section comes out on Halloween Day, and the juxtaposition was just too cute to pass up.
Can I read a couple of them?
Please.
John Shields, chef, co-owner, Smith and the Loyalist. We recently had an older gentleman with a much younger lady who we would have to assume were new friends for the evening. As the night wore on, the groping became much more palpable until at one point she went into the bathroom, only to have him follow her in. Trouble is they didn't lock the door. Another guest walked in on them. They jumped out, quickly paid the bill, and left with three courses left to go. Boy, that's embarrassing. Come on, people.
I would think. And also, I don't know. I'm trying to wrap my head around the appeal of such a stunt.
Well,
like, at what point you say, you know what would be awesome before the dessert arrives?
I'm public displays of affection. Here are the rules for restaurants. Tell me if you agree with this, Phil. When you're sitting there and the other couple or parties come, you can bust the ladies. Oh, hey, you're here. And you all stand up and you shake and hug and kiss on the cheeks.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's about it. I think
that's about it, too.
I don't think you get to grope, even if it's consensual, during the meal.
Especially when it's mutual. I mean, then you got a double grope, and that's fun for exactly two people. Groper and gropee, possibly.
Scott Worsham, co-owner of MFK and Bar Biscay, said, while working at a well-respected restaurant in Sonoma, California, that no longer exists, a man and a woman with the air of two divorcees on their first date are seated. By the way, I've gone to some restaurants that are hot with the 40, 50-year-old crowd who are
mm-hmm.
single, and it's so cute / icky. Because it's a little like high school again. They're there with their boyfriends, and there's a bunch of girls, or there's some guys, and they're kind of looking at the other table or the other people at the bar, and everybody's got on their hippest outfits, even though we're not really that hip anymore. But there you are. I what are you going to do? I salute the confidence of or the courage of these people to go out and do it. But at the same time, it just looks funny. I'll say that.
Well, I just see people doing best foot forward on a Thursday evening. So, but at the same time, how can you not appreciate the effort?
Totally. So a man and woman are there on their first date. They're seated. He peruses the wine list, and I ask if I can assist him with a selection. He declines with a wave of his hand, as if he knows all about wine, and please don't insult me reaction. Upon my return, he requests a bottle of the corkage, pronouncing the word with a French accent. I presume he's saying corkage.
I'm almost positive I'll try the corkage.
It takes me a second to realize that he is ordering the corkage fee, the cheapest thing on the list. But that's the fee you pay for bringing your own bottle.
Yeah, that's right.
With a straight face. So now what are you going to do if you're the waiter, right? This guy's already kind of snubbed you. So you could really diss on him and embarrass him, or you can do what this guy did, With a straight face, I politely inform him that I'll have to check on our availability of that wine. And then I go have a very solid laugh with the kitchen crew. And then I return and suggest our most inexpensive bottle on the list, to which he haughtily replies, "That will be fine." I have been known to occasionally now say corkage out loud for no reason.
Absolutely.
Because he's looking at that, it's like $98, $124. Oh, here's one, $25. We'll try the corkage.
Exactly. Now, I will say in some parts of in California, since you're in the middle of wine country, you can very well run into places in which the corkage fee is pretty close to the price of a bottle.
Really?
It's one of those things that restaurants don't enjoy having people bring in their own wines, but especially out in wine country or in places like Chicago or New York, you will have people who are actual collectors, serious collectors, and they have wonderful wines that aren't even on this restaurant's wine list, which is sort of the line that's drawn. If you're bringing in something nice that we don't even have, fine. But if you're just, if you want to pay the corkage fee and you're showing up with it, there's a kangaroo on the label. Nothing against kangaroos, but maybe that's not the wine you should be trying to pop open at a nice restaurant.
Plus, it's just such a profit center for the restaurants, right? I mean,
it is. Alcohol keeps restaurants going. If everybody walked into steakhouses the next 2 weeks and ordered nothing but steaks, no sides, no alcohol, no nothing, we would be out of steakhouses within a month.
Sorry, Zernich Worsham, the co-owner of MFK and Bar Biscay, said, "I once had to go into the men's room at a fundraiser after a party to politely ask a very famous English chef to refrain from doing lines of cocaine on the back of the toilet. He had been in there for over an hour, snorting loudly for all to hear." All right. Carol Wallach, former chef and owner of Sola, said, "We ran out of..." Oh, I'm not going to read that one just because of time, but I wanted to get to the one where the Rochelle Ibarola, is that how you say it? The general manager at Arami. "It was Friday, the 7th of October, 2016, 8:11 p.m. We had a full house of diners, over 80 guests, when the staff and probably diners started to smell smoke but couldn't find the source. In the kitchen, employees poked at the ceiling tiles, thinking an electrical issue was at hand. Still couldn't find it. At this point, I called the firemen. When they arrived, I addressed the dining room full of guests. 'Hi, guys. Can I have your attention? Unfortunately, we'll need to evacuate the building.' As soon as these polite words were out of my mouth, a fireman with a hatchet comes from behind yelling, 'Everybody out!' The firemen immediately start to rip up the walls, hacking away like The Shining. True to Chicago style, the diners carried their drinks." Okay, first, but I'm getting my alcohol. "And they grabbed the last pieces of sushi, whether from their plate or not, as they walked outside." Yeah, what a nightmare for the restaurant there, huh?
I love the part where she's trying to gently say, "Now, what we'll need to do is walk out," and then the fire guy, wasting no time, screams, "Everybody out." And when I replay that story in my mind, the fireman has Chris Tucker's voice.
All right, so how does that sound, Phil?
I can't do a very good Chris Tucker, but it's like, "Get out! Everybody out!"
I think you can do a pretty good Chris Tucker. John Hogan, executive chef.
Now my throat hurts.
At River Roast, which is where we spent a fair amount of money having my son's wedding and reception. When I was at Everest, Jean Joho, did I do that right? Did not want me to cook at all. So when I was at Everest, Joho, is he the owner of the place?
Chef and owner, yes.
Did not want me to cook at all. He wanted me to watch, taste the food, and make sure the cooks are tasting the food. So I'm telling them, taste your dressings, taste the cauliflower fondant, taste everything to make sure they're good. Stop right there. So that's what they do back in the kitchen, huh? Everything on my plate?
At a good place, sure.
Really? You know, when you watch these cooking shows, you see them do that. And until there were cooking shows, I didn't know that they were sticking their finger in the soup or dishing into the sauce or whatever and trying it. It seems...
Well, a good chef will starts his rounds. He's got about 16, 17 spoons in his top pocket. And it's dip a spoon, taste, into the, you know, into the dirty dish pile.
I see.
Another spoon, taste, move it along.
I guess so. If you don't double dip, we're all okay here.
Exactly. Now, I followed a chef around doing just exactly that. And his first stop was by the cutlery, and he grabbed a fistful of spoons and just taste tossed.
A few days later, Joho and I walked into the kitchen, and one cook, really a big guy, is holding a service spoon loaded with Ocetra caviar. Mm-hmm. Oh, caviar. And Joho yells, "What do you think you're doing?" And he says, "Well, they told me to eat caviar every day."
He's tasting. You got to give him that. He's tasting.
That's the way it goes. That's online. Chilling tales from the walk-in cooler. Restaurant pros share funny, scary stories from behind the line. It's Phil Vitel online at thechicagotribune.com/dining section. Stay well, Phil, and we'll visit with you again another day, my friend.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Always a pleasure to talk to, see, and read him.